Thank you, Zane, for always doing a good job. He got the songs to me a little bit late today, and you never notice until somebody does something wrong that he's always sends the songs on time, ready to go, good choices, and he's here leading the songs. Oh, that's from we've distributed food, as usual. Let me see, there's Stephanie and Tiani, and it looks like Bianca is like shocked, like what's going on there? Brianna, yeah. Oh, that's right. Brianna and Bianca have almost the same name, and they even kind of look a little bit similar, so I think that's the first time I actually made that mistake, but it's sort of, I've been fearing making that mistake for a long time.
Okay, no problem.
But you were really helping the poor people too, somewhere else, some other way, I'm sure. Okay, great. So we had a trivia night. All right. Yeah, and we had some really tough trivia questions, like who won the Super Bowl this year. That was one of the easier ones, but that was great. So now we're going to talk about Job. So 2 weeks ago, we covered Job chapter 1, 1 through 12. And last week, we covered Job 1:13 through the end of chapter 3. And this week, we're going to cover the last 39 chapters of Job. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to do more reading than anything else today. So today's sermon will be like maybe 60% just reading the scripture and making a few comments. So we kind of see what's going on in the book of Job. But what is going on in the book of Job? Job is dealing with the question of the big word theodicy, which is God good? So through Job, we ask and make some preliminary answers to questions like, why is there evil in the world? Why is there suffering? Why do we Christians in particular suffer? And also dealt with this morning is, when other people are suffering, what are we supposed to do about that? So we'll talk about those kinds of things. And we allowed the skeptic to ask us, if God is so powerful and loving, then why do we have cancer and genocide and these kinds of things? And it's not an easy question. And we provided, I think, a reasonable intellectual answer, which doesn't necessarily answer the emotional question. But we decided that the reason there's evil in the world is because God loves us. He loved us so much that he created us so that he could love us, so we could love him and love one another. But love gives a choice. So God put that tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden. Unfortunately, we chose to rebel against God. Evil came into the world. And we found out from Exodus that the idea of generational sin, you know, when sin happens, suffering results, even to the third and fourth generation of those who rebel against him. But we also discovered, both from Job and from other places in the Bible, that not all suffering is because of somebody's sin. In fact, there's other causes of suffering, such as natural causes. And then we even considered the possibility that suffering, in many ways, is a gift from God. Because through suffering, we grow. We learn to know God. There's no joy without suffering and things like that. And then we looked in Job 1:12, where basically Satan says to God, you know, hey, your people, they don't really love you. They're just serving you because they're giving you stuff, the ultimate skeptic. And God strangely says, all right, go for it. Go after Job. That was surprising that God gave that essentially free will to Satan himself. So, as you know, Satan went round one with Job, and then Satan went round two with Job. He took away all his family, his possessions, and he gave him these boils over his body. And what did his wife say?
Curse God
and die. And I love Job 1:22 and Job 2:10, where it says, in all this Job did not sin. Then last week we began to look at Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And by the way, one of the trivia questions on our trivia night was this. who is the shortest person in the Bible? All right, Tiani? Bildad. Yeah, Bildad, the shoe height. That's right. But, you know, they came from a great distance and they just sat with Job for 7 days and just commiserated with him and just listened to his lament. And we decided that that's a pretty good example. A pretty good example. And then we started to listen to Job. In Job chapter 3, I don't know if you remember, but he said some pretty outrageous stuff. He said, may the day that I was born be removed from the calendar. And why did I not perish at birth? And in verse 25 of Job 3, he said, what I feared has come upon me. And what I dreamed has happened to me. And we were tempted to think, man, what a sinner to not trust God. But we decided instead, you know what? That's called mourning. And Job is in mourning. And I pointed out that there are a lot of these kinds of passages in the Bible called laments. In fact, over half the Psalms are essentially laments, where David is, or others are complaining to God, why are you allowing this to happen? So we understand that God gets us emotionally, and laments are part of that. So now, we're going to start in Job chapter 4. We're going to actually start reading Job 4. So what we're going to see is Eliphaz is going to tell Job why he's suffering. And Job's going to say, you're wrong. This is why I'm suffering. And then Bildad's going to say to Job, no, this is why you're suffering. And Job's going to say, no, this is why I'm suffering. And then Zophar is going to say, no, Job, you're wrong. It's going to kind of go like that. It's going to go back and forth. We are not going to read it all. You can read it all later. We're going to start by reading Job 4, verse 1 through 9. Then Eliphaz the Temanite, that means he comes from Tema. The Temanite replied, if someone ventures a word with you, will you be impatient? Now, what have they been doing for the last 7 days?
Quiet.
Just being quiet. So now they're going to start talking. We're going to find out once they start talking, they start messing up pretty badly here. But who can keep from speaking? Think how you have instructed many, how you have strengthened feeble hands. Your words have supported those who stumbled. You have strengthened faltering knees. But now trouble comes on you, and you are discouraged. It strikes you, and you are dismayed. Should not your piety be your confidence? Let's think about it. Should not your piety be your confidence? And your blameless ways, your hope? Consider now, who, being innocent, has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed? As I have observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. And the breath of God, they perish. And the blast of his anger, they are no more. So basically, what Eliphaz is saying to our friend Job, if you are really pious, as you claim to be, and blameless, as you claim, you should be confident and hopeful and not discouraged or depressed. And I'm sure Job's saying, well, really, thanks a lot for the support right now, Eliphaz. You know, really great. In verse 7, he says, who being innocent has ever perished? I can think of a few. In verse 8, he says, those who plow evil, you know, plant evil essentially, and those who sow trouble, they reap it. So basically, you're reaping what you sow. The reason you're suffering right now, Job, is because of all the sins you committed. All right? That's his answer to the question. All right? You're suffering because of your sin. Now, is he right? How do you know that he's not right? Because we read Job chapter 1, right? Do we ever suffer as a direct result of sins that we committed?
Yes,
we do. And one of the points to come out of Job is you don't necessarily know. Judging like Eliphaz is doing here, not a good idea. Not a way to help, that's for sure. So we know from Job chapter 1 and chapter 2 that that's not why. In fact, as far as we understand it, he's suffering because God is allowing that to happen in order to glorify him and also in order to teach us something. And ultimately, we're going to see that Job will be stronger for having gone through this. Although if you're his kid, you may not see the benefit in that since you got killed in the process. It can be a little bit confusing sometimes. Life can be confusing. Job chapter 5, verse 8. So Eliphaz is going on. He says, but if I were you, I would appeal to God. I would lay my cause before him. What do you think about that advice? Terrible advice. Wait till we get to Job chapter 38. All right. We're going to get to Job chapter 38. All right. And you know, one of the things is the whole Bible is inspired by God. But did you know that the Bible contains things that are not true? Yeah. Like this is bad advice. It's interesting, something that's definitely not true is in the Bible, right? It could be confusing for a new Christian, like how could that be? But in Job, people are talking to each other, all right? And so eventually, God's going to speak, but God does not speak until the very end of the book. So we're going to have to sort of be patient here and let human beings foolishly answer the question about suffering, okay? So now we're going to go to our friend Job. Basically, what Eliphaz says is, Job, you're not innocent or upright, and that's why you're suffering. And I'm sure Job said something like, thanks a lot, Eliphaz. And so basically, from Eliphaz's perspective, if we're suffering, it's because of a sin that we have committed. It means we're not as righteous as we think. And maybe some of us feel that way. Maybe some of us are the accused type. And maybe some of us feel that God is against us. Or God is trying to mess us over. And God's trying to maybe get our attention. And the fact is, he's definitely not against you. But he might possibly be trying to get your attention. Maybe we feel the suffering I'm going through is my fault. God is getting back at me. My husband is unfaithful or I'm being abused. It's because of me. I've not been able to find a spouse. God is really opposing my path. I've been struggling with this chronic illness. God is against me. He doesn't really love me. So the message I would say from this little thing with Eliphaz is, let's be careful to judge even ourselves and others over the cause of things that happen in the world, because we may not know the answer. So are you the person who tends to be accused to think, yeah, God just doesn't even love me, or it's because of how bad that I am? Okay, now let's look at Job's response. Job 6, 1 through 3. Then Job replied, if only my anguish could be weighed and all my misery be placed on the scales, it would surely outweigh the sand of the seas. No wonder my words have been impetuous. You're right. I'm kind of being impetuous here. I'm kind of saying stuff, but, you know, give me a break. You know, look at what's happened to me lately. Skip down to verse 14. Anyone who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty, but my brothers are as undependable as intermittent streams, as the streams that overflow. When darkened by thawing ice and swollen with melting snow, but that stopped flowing in the dry season and the heat vanished from their channels. Caravans turn aside from their routes. They go off into the wasteland and perish. The caravans of Tema, the Temanite, right? Eliphaz is a Temanite. The caravans of Tema look for water. The traveling merchants of Sheba look in hope. They are distressed because they had been confident. They arrive there only to be disappointed. Now you two have proven to be of no help. You see something dreadful and are afraid. All right, basically saying, you are undependable, lousy friends. You really stink. I do not want your help at all. You've been terrible. Verse 22. Have I ever said, give something on my behalf? Pay a ransom for me from your wealth? Deliver me from the hand of the enemy? Rescue me from the clutches of the ruthless. Teach me and I'll be quiet. Show me where I have been wrong. How painful are honest words, But what do your arguments prove? Do you mean to correct what I say and treat my desperate words as wind? You would even cast lots for the fatherless and barter away your friend. Now be so kind as to look at me. Would I lie to your face? Relent. Don't be unjust. Reconsider, for my integrity is at stake. Is there any wickedness on my lip? Can my mouth not discern malice? So what's Job's response? Job's response is, I'm a righteous man, and I don't deserve any of this suffering. This is not fair at all. He says, show me where I've ever sinned. Wow, okay. He says, verse 28, have I ever lied? Verse 30, there is no wickedness on my lips. So he says to Eliphaz, you say I deserve this, but I say I don't deserve it at all. None of the stuff that's happening to me is my fault, and it's certainly not because of any sin I committed. Basically what he's saying is, I am sufficiently righteous that I should not expect any of these things to happen to me. This is not fair. So Job is appealing to his awesome righteousness and saying, this is not fair. So what do you think about that? Chapter 7, verse 17 through 20. He continues on here. I'm doing some skipping, but it's more of the same, all right? Verse 17 through 21 of chapter 7. He says, what is mankind that you make so much of them, that you give them so much attention, that you examine them every morning and test them every moment? Will you never look away from me? By the way, he's not talking to Eliphaz anymore. He's talking to God right now. All right? He's saying, God, leave me alone. Will you never look away from me or let me alone, even for an instant? If I have sinned, what have I done to you? You see everything we do. Why have you made me your target? Have I become a burden to you? Why do you not pardon my offenses and forgive my sins? For I will soon lie down in the dust. You will search for me, but I will be no more. So basically, pretty much Job says to God, I'm righteous. This is not fair. You're doing a really lousy job of being God, essentially. Yeah. God, I've suffered enough. Why don't you give me the job that I want? Why don't you help me with this disease that I'm suffering from? Why don't you give me a girlfriend or a wife? Why don't you give me a place to live? Why don't you have my kids get converted to Christ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe, possibly, we're kind of like Job sometimes. Maybe, possibly. But one thing I know is, Romans 3:10 says, there is no one righteous, not even one. That's what that one says. And Romans 3:20 says, there will be no one declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. And Ephesians 2:3, like the rest, we are like by nature objects of wrath. And Romans 3:23 says, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So I don't know. Job's explanation of his suffering is kind of falling short for me. I don't think he was righteous enough. I believe that he deserved eternal damnation, just like everybody in this room. So I'm not really with Job on that. Now, Bildad. Good old Bildad, the short guy. All right? Verse 1 through 7. So, then Bildad the Shuhite replied, how long will you say such things, Job? Your words are blustering wind. Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert what is right? Basically saying God is always just. So if something's happened to you, it's because of what you did. It's the only possible explanation. Does God pervert justice? Does the Almighty pervert what is right? When your children sinned against him, he gave them over to the penalty of their sin. Is that why they died? Because of their sin? No. Could it have been from a human perspective? Could have been. So his mistake is making a judgment here, not that he absolutely has to be wrong. But if you will seek God earnestly and plead with the Almighty, if you are pure and upright, even now he'll rouse himself in your behalf and restore you to your prosperous state. Your beginnings will seem humble, so prosperous will be your future. So basically, Bildad says kind of the same thing Eliphaz said. Your trouble is the result of your own rebellion and sin. Basically, he says, how dare you challenge God? Good point. How your children got what they deserve because of their sin? And if you were pure and upright, and if you stop sinning, God will restore your awesomeness, and it'll be really great. You are suffering because of your sin. Basically, his advice is, stop sinning right now. Have you ever felt this way? All right, have you ever felt like, and again, it's all because of you, and if you were perfect, that everything would go great, and that God is totally wrong when he allows this suffering to come into your life? One thing I know is Bildad is wrong. Yep. Okay, now let's see. Job is going to defend himself. He's going to defend himself. Job 9, 1 and 2. He says, then Job replied, indeed, I know that this is true. But how can mere mortals prove their innocence before God? He's kind of agreeing with Bildad. But he's saying, how am I supposed to solve this problem? How am I supposed to prove that I'm awesome and perfect to God? That's going to be a challenge for me. Now let's skip down to verse 20 of chapter 9. And he says, even if I were innocent, my mouth would condemn me. If I were blameless, he would pronounce me guilty. Although I am blameless, ouch, I have no concern for myself. I despise my own life. It is all the same. That is why I say he destroys both the blameless and the wicked. Wow. Basically saying God destroys both the good and the evil equally. He says, I'm blameless, and yet God is destroying me. I don't deserve any of this. So Job is justifying himself before God. I think that's kind of a bad idea. I don't know if anybody here has ever been like Job. Hopefully not. All right. Basically says, it's all unfair. Chapter 10, 1 through 8. He's going to go on and on and on. And one thing for sure, Job's a real talker. He's a real talker. I loathe my very life. Job 10, verse 1. Therefore, I will give free rein to my complaint. I deserve to be angry right now. And speak out in the bitterness of my soul. I say to God, do not declare me guilty, but tell me what charge you have against me. First of all, he's assuming he's suffering because of his sin. Second of all, he's assuming he doesn't deserve it. Wrong on point one, wrong on point two. Does it please you to oppress me, to spurn the work of your hands while you smile in the plans of the wicked? A lot of Psalms. By the way, we're going to start Psalms next week. And we're going to see David saying some things kind of similar to this. David has a lot of laments. He said, God, how could you let this happen? Anyway, I got lost. Where was I? Three, yeah. Do you have eyes of flesh? Do you see as a mortal sees? Are your days like those of a mortal, or your years like those of a strong man, that you must search out my faults and probe after my sin? Though you know that I am not guilty and that no one can rescue me from your hand. He says, your hands shaped me and made me. Will you now turn and destroy me? Wow, maybe you felt something like this. Job is not aware that there might possibly just maybe be another cause for what's happening in his life. Now, remember last week we did a little exercise, right? We kind of shared something that we'd suffered, correct? We did that? So we're going to do something kind of like that. We take about 3 or 4 minutes. And let's share with a neighbor a time you felt that God was being unfair or unjust to you. All right? Share with your neighbor a time in your Malero says, I don't want to do that.
No, I don't want to do it.
You want to do it with Juan. Okay. Share with your neighbor a time where you felt God was being unjust to you or unfair to you. Okay? Let's do it. Oh, by the way, and then when your partner says it to you, paraphrase back to them. Practice sort of empathic listening. So whatever they say to you, kind of paraphrase it back to them in your own words. Okay. The time where you were tempted to feel that way, maybe.
With my mother. Yeah.
Why'd you give me a mom like that? You kind of felt that way maybe sometimes?
Yeah, why didn't you give me a better example?
Yeah.
I think I understand why, so I don't.
But maybe you don't understand why. Maybe you can't understand why.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point of Job. In a way. Yeah.
But I know it was to learn something. And I know it was for something.
But maybe because she was sinning.
It
could be. That's the thing is, we don't know. I mean, that's the hard thing with some of these things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think like in the heat of like some moments, I feel like it's unfair, but I think like when I look at a bigger picture and I see how far I've come, mm-hmm. how much I've learned, and that kind of
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'll be like, wasn't fair. But then I get I kind of get over it, you know? Like, I feel like,
for me, there's been time in my marriage where it wasn't going that great, where I felt like, is this the right one for me? Yeah. Yeah. So we have stuff like that. Yeah. Okay, let's start up again. Tiani and I were sharing, and Tiani was talking about something. I'm not going to share what she's talking about, but she was trying to answer the question why that had happened. And she was trying to provide answers to that question. All right, but I'm not sure if that's the purpose of this exercise, is to get the answer to the question why that happened. I'm not sure. I think it was an empathic listening exercise, right? And it was also a chance to get open and, you know, and Job's definitely doing that in this book, that's for sure. He's doing that. All right? So, by the way, in order to cover this, I want to talk about Zophar. I feel like it's cheating Zophar if I don't get him a chance to speak. Well, we'll read a little bit of Zophar, but we're just going to go so far. With Zophar. Alright, good. Alright. 13 through 19. Yet if you devote your heart to him, this is going to be almost the same thing that Eliphaz and Bildad said. Yet, verse 13, Job 11:13. Yet if you devote your heart to him and stretch out your hands to him, if you put away the sin that is in your hand, and if you allow no evil to dwell in your tent, then, free of fault, you will lift up your face, you will stand firm without fear, you will surely forget your trouble, recalling it only as waters gone by. Life will be brighter than noonday, and darkness will become like morning. You will be secure because there is hope. You will look about you and take your rest in safety. Nothing bad will ever happen to you again if you simply stop sinning. All right? And Job, chapter 13, he responds to Zophar similarly than in the past. Job 13, 13 through 19. Job's going to sort of justify himself again. Keep silent and let me speak. Then let come to me what may. Why do I put myself in jeopardy and take my life in your hands? Though he slay me, yet I will hope in him. I will surely defend my ways to his face. Indeed, this will turn out for my deliverance, for my God, for no godless person would dare come before him. But I'm not one of those people. Okay, great. So we're going to skip roughly 20-something chapters, okay? We're going to go to Job 29, 7 through 20. By the way, there's one person we haven't heard from yet, and his name is Elihu. So basically, we're going to hear some final words from Job. Then we're going to hear from a fourth person who's going to give Job some feedback. A young dude, a young gun. So let's read Job 29, starting at verse 7. All right, Job 29, verse 7. Here we go. Oops. When I went to the gate of the city and took my seat in the public square, the young men saw me and they stepped aside. The old men rose to their feet. The chief men refrained from speaking and they covered their mouths with their hands. The voices of the nobles were hushed and their tongues stuck to the roof of their mouths. Whoever heard me spoke well of me. And those who saw me commended me because I rescued the poor who cried for help and the fatherless who had none to assist them. The one who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing. I put on righteousness as my clothing. Justice was my robe and my turban. I was the eyes of the blind and the feet of the lame. I was a father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger. I broke the fangs of the wicked and snatched the victims from their teeth. I thought I will die in my own house. My days as numerous as the grains of sand. My roots will reach to the water and the dew will lie all night on my branches. My glory will not fade. The bow will ever be new in my hand. What's one word that's repeated there about 17 times? I. That's different. That's A-Y-E. I, right? Yeah. Said, I did this. I did that. I was awesome. And by the way, if you've done something good and you feel good about it, that's actually an okay thing. God wants you to feel good about what you've done with your life. All right, but if you start to justify yourself as this awesome, amazing person for whom God ought to owe all kinds of blessing, all right, he said in verse 18, I will have an unending string of blessings from God because of my awesomeness. All right, verse 31, 1 through 6, he's going to sort of repeat himself there. I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a young woman. For what is our lot from God above, our heritage from the Almighty on earth? Is it not ruin for the wicked and disaster for those who do wrong? Does he not see my ways and count my every step? If I have walked with falsehood or my foot has hurried after deceit, let God weigh me in honest scales. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be weighed in honest scales on judgment day. Man. And he will know that I am blameless. If my steps have turned from the path, if my heart has been led by my eyes, if my hands have been defiled, then may others eat what I have sown, and may my crops be uprooted. All right. But on the other hand, let's go back to Job verse 30. Another thing going on here, verse 16. He says, and now my life ebbs away. Days of suffering grip me. Night pierces my bones, my gnawing pains never rest. Remember what's going on in chapter 2. He's still sitting there in these tremendous sores from top of his head to the sole of his feet. He's knowing unending chronic pain. All right, I got lost for a second here. Yes, 18. In his great power, God becomes like clothing to me. He binds me like the neck of my garment. He throws me into the mud, and I'm reduced to dust and ashes. God threw me in the mud. I cry out to you, God, but you do not answer. I stand up, but you merely look at me. You turn on me ruthlessly. With the might of your hand, you attack me. You snatch me up. You drive me before the wind. You toss me about in the storm. I know you'll bring me down to death, to the place appointed for all the living. All right, Job is having a hard time. God, you threw me into the mud. You turn on me ruthlessly. You're killing me. Job needs some answers. Let's see if Elihu can do just a little bit better. Verse 1 through 5, Job 32. So these three men stopped answering Job. Praise God. Job's saying, thank you for stopping talking. Because he was righteous in his own eyes. But Elihu, son of Barakel, the Buzite of the family of Ram, became very angry with Job for justifying himself rather than God. That kind of makes sense. He was also angry with the three friends because they had found no way to refute Job, and that they had condemned him. Now, Elihu had waited before speaking to Job because they were older than he. Do we give some credit to Elihu for this? Yeah. This is good. But when he saw that the three men had nothing more to say, his anger was aroused. Let's just read a snippet from Elihu, Job 33, starting in verse 8. Job 33, starting in verse 8. 8 through 14. Elihu, what is Elihu going to say? He's going to say this. But you have said in my hearing, I heard the very words, I am pure. I have done nothing wrong. I am clean and free from sin. Yet God has found fault with me. He considers me his enemy. He fastens his feet in shackles. He keeps close watch on all my paths. But I tell you, in this you are not right. For God is greater than any mortal. Why do you complain to him that he responds to no one's words? Let's skip down. Well, yeah, I'll keep going a little bit farther. But God does speak now one way, now another, though no one perceives it. What he's saying is, basically, you may not ever know why you're suffering, essentially. All right? He said, you said you're pure and have done nothing wrong and don't deserve it. He says, Job, you're wrong. He says, God's ways are a mystery and God speaks to us in subtle ways. Let's read starting in verse 19 of chapter 33. Or someone may be chastened on a bed of pain with constant distress in their bones so that their body finds food repulsive and their soul loathes the choicest meal. Their flesh wastes away to nothing and their bones, once hidden, now stick out. They draw near to the pit, their life to the messengers of death. Yet if there is an angel at their side, a messenger, one out of 1,000, sent to them, tell them how to be upright, and he is gracious to that person and says to God, spare them from going down to the pit. I have found a ransom for them. Let their flesh be renewed like a child's. Let them be restored as in the days of their youth. Then that person can pray to God and find favor with him. They will see God's face and shout for joy. He will restore them to full well-being. And they will go to others and say, I have sinned. I have perverted what is right. But I did not get what I deserved. All right, so basically, he's saying, if you are suffering, you can pray to God. Just pray to God. That sounds like good advice. And if you have sinned, and you feel like it's not deserved, then, you know, pray for God to kind of restore you. So it seems like of the five, Elihu is kind of getting it. The problem is, basically, he's saying God can be mysterious in certain ways, but he basically tells him, if you ask, he will tell you the reason for your suffering eventually. All right. So now, by the way, God's going to start to speak. So let's listen to God. We've been listening to all these whining, complaining people up till now. All right. Let's listen to God. Job chapter 38. Here you go. So at some point, God says, all right, enough. Stop talking. And here's what Job has to say. God is going to ask Job 77 questions. I think the 77 is not an accident. There's 77. God is going to ask Job 17 questions. Let's start in verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. He said, who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you and you will answer me. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea? or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Oops. What is the way to the abode of light? Where does darkness reside? Can you take them to their places? Do you know their the paths to their dwellings? Surely you know, for you were already born. You have lived so many years. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Or seen the storehouses of the hail, which I reserve for times of trouble, for days of war and battle? What is the way to the place where the lightning is dispersed, or the place where the east winds were scattered over the earth? Who cuts a channel for the torrents of rain and a path for the thunderstorm? And it goes on and on. All right. Does God answer Job's question as to why he's suffering? He does not. I believe, although Elihu is much more accurate than Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz, because Job is not sufficiently righteous to be able to charge God, but he's also not suffering because of any sin that he'd done. So he's right in that. But, you know, what about COVID-19? Is this just a random natural event, or is God trying to get our attention? I don't know. I don't know. What about my mother's cancer? I don't know. What about this persecution that I've been suffering? I don't know. I don't know. Not sure. Let's look at God's summary. Job 40, verse 1 and 2. The Lord said to Job, "Will the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Let him who accuses God answer him." That's kind of his summary. It seems like God's being pretty hard on Job. Kind of seems that way. Wow, God, you're kind of being tough. Will you correct me? Will you accuse me? But you know what? I think Job is starting to get it. Let's read verse 3. Then Job answered the Lord, "I'm unworthy. How can I reply to you? I put my hand over my mouth," which he should have done a long time ago. "I spoke once, but I have no answer. Twice, but I will say no more." Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. "Brace yourself like a man. I will question you and you will answer me. Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? Did you have an arm like God's, and can your voice thunder like this? Then adorn yourself with glory and splendor, and clothe yourself in honor and majesty. Unleash the fury of your wrath. Look at all who are proud and bring them low." So Job finally comes around. He actually kind of gets around to repenting. That's a good thing. Says, "God, I admit that probably I'm not quite as awesome as I thought. From now on, I'm going to simply trust your ways, and I'm going to allow you to speak when you speak, and I'm going to be quiet and stop challenging you." Let's go to the epilogue, because we're basically done. All right? Job 42. Kind of the end of the story. After the Lord said these things to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "I'm angry with you and your two friends, because you have not spoken the truth about me, as my servant Job has." All right, and then he basically tells them to offer a sacrifice. Otherwise, man, you guys are in toast. Verse 10. After Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes. He gave him twice as much as he had before. All his brothers and sisters and everyone who had known him before came and ate with him in his house. They comforted him and consoled him over all the trouble the Lord had brought on him. And each one gave him a piece of silver and a gold ring. The Lord blessed the latter parts of Job's life more than the former part, and he gave him a whole bunch of stuff. I believe Job ended up a much stronger man at the end than he was at the beginning. And I think Job learned a lesson here. All right, which is, you know what? I think I just need to trust God, and I don't need God to answer my questions. I'm not saying there are no answers. I'm not saying you can't delve into what happened and you know, think you might know. You might know. But I think we should just let God be God. So God gave Job all that he had and even more. And I believe at the end, Job is a much better person than he was before it started. He's more resilient. He has much less self-pride. He has a lot more empathy. He's a much better friend and a better shepherd of the people that God had put him over. Suffering, grief, and loss are an opportunity to connect with God. Suffering, grief, and loss are an opportunity to connect with God. Job is a better person through suffering, and we can be as well. All right, not that we're going to enjoy it, and mourning and lament are natural and normal, and that's not what God was angry at Job for. God was angry at Job for basically claiming his own righteousness. That was the problem. So when we suffer loss, we'll mourn and we will lament, and we need to let that happen. We need to not get down on people for doing that. We need to learn to just listen. Suffering and loss do not demonstrate that God does not love us. I know that's a double negative, but I'm going to say it that way. Suffering and loss do not demonstrate that God doesn't love us. Okay? On the contrary, they are how God refines us. And it's part of how we come to know Him, as Paul said. So we need to let those who grieve, grieve, and we need to support them with our presence more than with our words. And that's a few things I learned from Job. Okay. Ah. I'm leading the next song.
There you go.
Let's go.
What happened to Zane today, by the way, is his computer went down, and so that's yep, they had a pretty good reason. Plus, it's his mother's birthday, and he was hanging out with his mother for her birthday. There you go. So we didn't have a good Lord's Supper song, so we're going to do it. And by the way, Jan is doing the Lord's Supper today, and her Lord's Supper is basically going to be based off of this song. So let's stand together and sing the old rubber crosses. The old rugged cross. Here we go. I think I might still have a voice here, so we'll try. On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering and shame. And I love that old cross where the dearest and best for a world of lost sinners was slain. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. To the old rugged cross I will ever be true, its shame and reproach gladly bear. Then he'll call me someday to my home far away, where his glory forever I'll share. And I'll cherish the old rugged cross till my trophy at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. All right. We're now going to share the Lord's Supper.